Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everyone. Matt Williamson back. Tuesday here around noon, hiding out in my bedroom so that my kids don't disrupt the podcast at all today. Here in sunny Pittsburgh. Things are good on my end for sure. I'll be heading up to Steelers camp, as I mentioned, tomorrow. Although tomorrow's podcast I will do from home, and it won't be a Steelers podcast, I promise. Thursdays might be a Steelers podcast, or at least we'll certainly have some more Steelers observations as well as going around the league and what else is going on. But now, you know, I'm going to do our front four as usual, talk about four big things going on around the league. And there's always a couple notes always to talk about every day. It's an eventful time of the year. We're not too far away from, you know, getting into actually seeing real football. We got kind of deprived of that over the weekend. But, hey, it was just a Hall of Fame game, and a lot of the guys aren't going to play anyways. But it's not far. You know, pretty soon we're going to be seeing some real preseason action. I will be at Steelers-Lions on Friday and do the post-game show afterwards. That'll be a Steelers-centric show, but you're urged to watch. But my eyes will be on the Lions as much as the Steelers during that time frame. So let's dig right in. You are on the Locked On NFL podcast. And I should mention, too, the Locked On network is growing by leaps and bounds. And there's now a fantasy show with Vinny Iyer, as well as all the NFL teams are starting to really round themselves out and starting to fill up in a very hurry. You know, it shouldn't be long till hopefully we get to all 32, and we'll start to get those guys in on this podcast as well. So, yeah, I urge you to check them all out, but especially this one, especially the fantasy one, if you're into fantasy, and especially whatever your favorite team is or your favorite division. But, again, all of them are excellent. I've listened to a fair amount of them, and they're very, very impressive. It's quite the podcasting empire that David Locke is building here. So, without any further ado, let's talk some football. So, in the front four, we're going to do four topics, and I'm going to do a deep dive on the Browns, really dig into the Browns in general. And I just wrote an article for today's Pigskin that should be up today. It's noon on Tuesday. It should be up today for sure. Turned it in over 24 hours ago. But it's a big one. It's a 2,000-word article about the Browns and the state of the team and what they're thinking. I urge you to check that out. I'll be posting that on Twitter quite a bit. And this will be some of my reflections on that as well. But let's first talk about the front four. First thing that I think of note is ESPN Adam Schefter has reported that Aqib Talib could face an 8-game suspension. If you remember, he was involved in a shooting in June, and it's been very quiet since. You know, actually, Talib's the one that got shot. It was his right leg. But he's, you know, he returned to practice. He's okay. He's not injured. And thank God. I mean, obviously, we don't want anybody getting hurt, obviously, or getting shot, of course. But from a football perspective, this is a big deal. You know, I mean, you look at that secondary. It's probably the best secondary in the league. I think Chris Harris is the best player in that secondary, the better player than Talib. But having both of them, is, you know, they play a lot of man coverage. They play a lot of dime. You know, there's a lot of six defensive backs on the field at once, quite a high percentage of the time. But having Harris and Talib is kind of a 1A, 1B situation at corner is really a nice situation because they're very different players. You know, Harris is an elite slot corner. He doesn't look the prototype. You know, Talib was a first-round pick and would have went higher if he didn't have some off-the-field incidents even back then. But he's the big physical, press you at the line of scrimmage, do battle. I mean, if Calvin Johnson comes to town or Julio Jones, you would think that, you know, Aqib Talib would be the guy on him, where Harris would go against the Antonio Brown type or maybe an Odell Beckham. I think Harris is a little better at what he does, but that's some really nice versatility, obviously, in your top two corners. The third guy, Roby, is also a very good player. Again, that's why it's the best secondary in the league. Their safeties are also pretty darn good, too, and their pass rush is pretty darn good, too. But, you know, big picture here for the Broncos, that division's very difficult. You know, we talked about it. I think it's the best division in the league. I think all four teams are, I don't know if they're contenders, but they're all legit. I mean, there's no patsies in the AFC West, so there's not a lot of room for error there. And I'm going to say room for error a couple times here. The offense, does anyone think it's going to be better than last year's? I mean, the quarterback situation, maybe they run the ball better. Maybe the line's better. But Mark Sanchez, I mean, I'm not buying into Simeon talk, by the way. I'm not even bringing him up. I think it's Sanchez until Lynch is ready. But the formula is going to be the same for Denver. Is we need to win games 17-16, 16-10. I mean, low-scoring games where, again, not much room for error when you do that. When your offense doesn't score points and you get a bad bounce at the end of the game or a bad call at the end of the game and boom, a winnable game goes to a losable game in a hurry. And then you can't do anything about it because your quarterback's not going to lead a two-minute drill to save the day. So, therefore, they're going to need an elite. Not just a very good, not just a great. I mean, they need a great to elite type of defense. And they had an elite defense last year. But now, maybe Tlaib's gone for half the season. Maybe that's an extra loss or two, you know, something along those lines. And it's hard to equate the, you know, a one suspension or a one loss, you know, to a win-loss record. But it's going to be a lot more difficult to win games without him. Trevathan's already gone. And more importantly, Malik Jackson's gone. So they didn't do a lot to reinforce the D. I'm sure it'll still be very, very good. It'll probably be one of the best in the league. But this is troubling news. I mean, to me, those three losses on the defensive side of the ball, personnel losses, could be enough to keep these guys out of the postseason. You know, I mean, is Mark Sanchez going to protect the football and play mistake-free ball and be a, quote, caretaker? I wouldn't bet on it. I'm going to lump two other injuries together here because both of them seem as though they're not a big deal. You know, at least they're not to me or you. But Jordan Matthews has a bone bruise. He's supposedly out 2 to 4 weeks. Eric Ebron hurt his ankle, and both are expected to be there for the opening, you know, for opening weekend, you know, week one. So it seems as though the Lions and Eagles dodged some big bullets here. You know, they're both these players are being counted on to get quite a few targets, I would think, especially Matthews. You know, I would think Matthews and Ertz are the lead dogs in that Eagles passing game, a controlled passing game. I also think Aguilar's, you know, it's not quite time to throw dirt on Aguilar's grave yet. You know, I think this new system could be good for him as well. This is sort of a put-up-or-shut-up year for Ebron. You know, and tight ends take time. You know, he's going to be a athletic, field-stretching tight end, former first-round pick that everyone will remember they took ahead of Aaron Donald and Odell Beckham. That's not Ebron's fault, by the way, Lions fans, but I can understand your grief on that. But I think he's a decent player, you know, but with Calvin gone, another big body, red zone, you know, they're going to need both these guys, Matthews and Ebron. So I think the key is, in case you heard, and you know, sorry, some fantasy ramifications as well, but if you had heard that Matthews and Ebron did go down, as it stands today in early August, that they should be ready for week one, I would be shocked if either one of them plays in the preseason at all, though. Next note to talk about is about the Arizona Cardinals. And just a little side note here, all my buddies have been telling me about this series that you get through Amazon, All or Nothing, a season with the Arizona Cardinals. Actually, a friend of mine, someone I went to high school with, he's a year younger than me, works at NFL Films now, and he was like the lead guy on this. And they followed the Cardinals for the entire season last year. And a lot of my buddies obviously have watched it because of the affiliation with my high school and whatnot. And it's been great. I've watched 5 of the episodes so far. I'll probably finish it up. You know, when I finish my day, I've been watching one. And they're great. You know, Bruce Arians is an easy guy to root for. And like I said, I have an affiliation with Fitzgerald. There's a lot of Pittsburgh connections, obviously, with that team. And I think this is going to be, they're probably going to be my pick in the NFC to win the whole thing. But the NFC is loaded with talent, too. I mean, I really think Seattle, Green Bay, Carolina, and Minnesota, all those teams could win the Super Bowl. But I'm leaning towards Arizona. We'll see. I'm excited to see the preseason with these guys. But the news here, that they are working on more contract extensions. You know, I think we talked about how they locked up the Honey Badger, you know, which is phenomenal. As I often describe him, he's one of the best corners and one of the best safeties in the league, and probably means they aren't worried about his injuries. They also extended Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, they're foundation pieces. I'm not sure the extent of Larry's deal. I know he's a big, big cap hit. Maybe that's just moving money around. But they have three other big ones coming up, and that's Calais Campbell, Michael Floyd. I think Michael Floyd's going to be their number one receiver this year, by the way. You know, I think he's in for a huge year. Look how he finished last year. Just go back and check it out. That's what he's capable of. And then, you know, the defensive end that they traded for from the Patriots, which is a big reason the Patriots traded him, Chandler Jones, that his contract's up after the year. The Patriots have a lot of players on the defensive side of the ball, namely Jamie Collins, who's a stud, that they're going to have to pay. And so I think they decide they'll get some picks out of Chandler Jones, and they weren't going to be able to pay him anyways. But Arizona has some more money to shell out, and it looks like they are not bashful about doing it whatsoever. I mean, if they can extend Fitzgerald, Palmer, lock up Matthew Campbell, Chandler Jones, and Michael Floyd, you know, that's pretty good. You know, that's a pretty nice foundation for the next few years to have under contract. And I guess there could be some concern about Palmer. You know, we obviously didn't like what he did in the playoffs. He has a history in the playoffs that's a little frightening. He is getting up in age. It wouldn't shock me, and it kind of shocks me that they didn't use a, you know, third-round pick on Cardale Jones this year or somebody like that for the long term. But that's a story for another day. Palmer is going to be their quarterback. But this team is very good. I think the defense is going to be great. I think the offense might be the best in the league. So keep an eye on the Cardinals for the long term. They are being aggressive with their money to keep their own, as they should. Well, folks, this is a weird time of year, you know, for our last four here. The last bullet point I was going to talk about, the Ravens. I think I'm going to save that for tomorrow. And why I say this is a weird time of year is because as we're recording, all these teams are practicing. There's all these beat writers watching with phone in hand, tweeting things left and right. And I don't want to overreact to something that may be a whole lot of nothing, but it's 12:23 here on Tuesday, and the news just broke 1 second ago, right before, you know, I was going to go to the final front four, that Julian Edelman was injured just now. And these are a few quotes, you know, Patriots insider Tom Curran, this was his quote: Julian Edelman has gone off the side with disgust through helmet. Trainer Jim Whalen looking at lower leg as Edelman sits on cart. And then another reporter, Courtney Fallon, she says, Edelman injury happened during one-on-one drill, ran out, then slammed his helmet. Trainers examine lower leg on cart for 10 to 15 minutes. Now, does that mean Julie Edelman is going to miss a year, or who knows what's going on with him? I don't know, but you guys probably, by the time you download this, we'll have a better feel for it than I will, hopefully. Hopefully more news comes out. Hopefully more news is good for the Patriots in Edelman. You know, he is a key component to that team. Obviously, they've had ridiculous success with Edelman clones, Amendola, going back to Welker. It's a key component, an extension of their running game, those option routes out of the slot, where the slot receiver, often Edelman, is very much on the same page with Tom Brady, and the ball comes out now. You know, you read a coverage on the fly, you either break in or you break out, you know, in a nutshell. Ball comes out now, hits him in stride, and it's like a long handoff between these guys. And in a way, it's almost indefensible. Now, Amendola probably won't be in the picture. They brought in Hogan, who, despite his skin color, I don't think he's this type of shifty slot player. I think he's a little more outside the numbers. I don't think he would be an obvious replacement for Edelman. This is a concern. You know, if he were to be out, this would be a big worry. I'm not sure, you know, my first thoughts are, boy, does this really hurt Garoppolo for the first 4 weeks? Certainly doesn't help him. I mean, that's obvious. It certainly doesn't help him. But I don't think he's ever going to have the rapport with Edelman that, you know, that Brady does. So let's just keep an eye out on this one, though, because I had mentioned the Cardinals are probably going to be my pick in the NFC to win the whole thing. I think the Patriots are the best team in the league, you know, by a narrow margin, over Arizona, Pittsburgh, those other NFC teams I mentioned. And something like this could bump them down from that. I mean, he is an integral part of that team. We know that this team is a chameleon, you know, that Bill Belichick can adapt on the fly. And, you know, maybe they become a power running team with LeGarrette Blount behind a huge offensive line and two big tight ends, especially to start the season to keep things off Garoppolo's plate. Or maybe Edelman's only out a month, or maybe it's not that big a deal. But it's something to monitor, and he would be a major, major loss for the Patriots. So let's see. Now, folks, let's do our deep dig today. And by that, it's just not going to be a little bullet point. I want to talk 10 minutes, 15 minutes, something like that, about the state of the Cleveland Browns. And this one touches home a little bit. If you don't know, I was a scout for the Browns for a year, and mostly it was a very, very positive experience. Hey, I mean, hey, I was in the NFL. You know, it was a dream of mine since I was a little kid to be a scout. I never wanted to be a quarterback or a defensive end or a running back because basically I knew that was never going to happen. I wasn't very athletically gifted, genetically challenged in terms of my movement skills, to say the least. But I'm a bigger guy, but that was never going to be a football player or an athlete of any sort. But I always wanted to build a team, and I always wanted to be a scout. And I got to do that for a year in the NFL. And I was with the Browns, I've sold this for. I was with the Browns pretty much the day after they drafted Kellen Winslow Jr. Very good draft class. That was the Eli, Roethlisberger, Rivers, Fitzgerald, Sean Taylor, you know, loaded draft class. And then I was put the whole season in, and we, majority of us, were let go right after we selected Braylon Edwards third overall, who was the top player on our board. Phil Savage and Romeo Crennel were the head coach and GM at the time of that happening, and Butch Davis was who hired me, when there was a heavy, heavy influence of the U when I was there. But growing up in Pittsburgh, I realized that, man, I mean, this is a brutal way to build an organization with all the constant change. I mean, they were the anti-Steelers, and they have been ever since. And to me, that's the number one crime they've committed. Hopefully, this new regime actually gets a chance to do something. And if we can operate under the assumption, which we probably can't, you know, because I think the Browns are going to be the worst team in the league this year, that ownership will at least give these guys 2, 3, 4 years to implement their plan, it could be a good plan. And I think the first thing we have to do when looking at the Browns organization is give them the benefit of the doubt. Just because they've had 9,000 quarterbacks and 100 coaches and 24 GMs, that doesn't mean that this group doesn't know what they're doing. I think you have to look at the Browns because their roster is so poor as an expansion team. And this is what I wrote in that article I mentioned. And I urge you to check that article out. It's on today's pigskin at fanrag.com. And it's one of the better things I've written in a while. And it's a pretty good stuff. But this one's a little longer. It's like double the size of a usual article, really digging into what I think the Browns are doing. And for the most part, I think their plan is a feasible one. And it's going to be a gigantic one. You know, I mean, they are the worst team in the league. They don't have much to build around, but at least they have a plan. And if they have time to implement it, maybe it'll work. So I urge all of you to say, okay, let's look at the Browns for when this front office and Hugh Jackson, new coaching staff, took over. And let's just say they're truly an expansion team. And there's an expansion draft, and there was about 10 or 12 good players made available from other teams that the Browns grabbed in the expansion draft. Joe Thomas, Joe Hayden, Danny Shelton, who didn't play very well last year. Cameron Irving, didn't play very well last year. Joel Batonio, Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson, Josh McCown, Josh Gordon, who, you know, was then suspended. You know, they didn't know where his status would be whenever they took this group over. But the rest of the crew is, I don't want to say useless. I mean, there's probably another 10 guys there that have some value, but they're not core dudes, and even half the guys I mentioned might not be core dudes. So, you know, they didn't get much. They didn't have much to start with. But they did have the second pick in the draft, which they earned, and I expect them to earn a very similar pick this upcoming year. And you can criticize them, you know, why didn't you take Wentz? Why didn't you take the franchise quarterback to build around? Well, I think they deserve the benefit of the doubt here too, that once the Rams moved up to one, maybe, and I don't know this, but I have a hunch, that the Browns wanted Goff, and they knew he wasn't going to be there. They didn't love Wentz, they loved Goff. If that's true, okay. You know, that's what talent evaluation is all about. I think that they're similar prospects, but they're different players. If you knew Goff was going to be off the board, I'm fine with trading out and getting a lot of picks. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Because clearly, and even before we get to the draft, we have to mention free agency. You know, they had money to spend. I don't think, you know, free agents are very excited to go to Cleveland right now. I mean, I think it's the least desirable destination in the whole league. But what they did is pretty obvious, and they got a lot of heat for this. You know, they're these new guys from baseball that are just analytics. They don't know anything about football, and they let Tashaun Gibson and Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz and Travis Benjamin, all our good guys, left. Yep, that's true. And you know why? Because all those guys are going to yield massive amounts of compensatory picks in the 2017 draft. And this is the theme. Everything that they've done is to get a ton of draft picks. And they're making that happen. And I think they realize, as most teams do, although people don't do that, I mean, people are very, that it doesn't always show up in their actions. But if you trade down and you trade down and you bring in, they brought in 14 draft picks this year. And you hit on half of them, which is about the going rate. You know, you look, go back at drafthistory.com and pick any team's draft. 50% of them are useless people, you know, useless players. But if you bring in, if you use more picks, you got a better chance of bringing in more people. Their roster can obviously handle it too. It's not like they're a loaded team that they'd have to cut great players to fit these guys in. They're building competition. They're building youth. And in the draft, they drafted, you know, Coleman first overall. But they drafted 4/5 wide receivers in that draft, and they drafted 3 pass rushers. Clearly, they are dedicating their draft resources to building a passing game. You know, the quarterback isn't there, most likely. We'll get to that. But they probably, you know, what they're going to do is today. This is today's NFL is a passing league, so we're going to get pass rushers. We're going to start with the little bit we have in terms of veterans. We're going to bring a ton of pass rushers. We're going to bring a ton of wide receivers, and we better be good at those positions in the very near future. Okay, you know, even if a couple guys miss, they still have fallback plans. They also draft Cody Kessler, who I don't think he's as good as Andy Dalton. I didn't think he should have been that kind of pick, but I bet Hugh Jackson looks at Cody Kessler and says, I can turn that guy into Andy Dalton. And I think that's possible. And I think that's your fallback plan. And if Kessler ends up being a 10-year backup for the Browns, he's still very worth a third-round pick. The safe option. Probably won't kill you. I can develop this guy into be a smart backup / Alex Smith caretaker player if everyone around him is loaded. And that's, in a way, is what the Bengals did and what Hugh Jackson did with Dalton. They also have McCown. And the recent news here and why I'm talking about this is Robert Griffin III has been named the starter. And that's the smart move. You know, they're not going to win the Super Bowls here. If the quarterback is not on the roster, they may take Watson out of Clemson, you know, first overall, or even the top of the second round. I mean, their quarterback might still be playing college football, and they have the resources to land a stud quarterback if need be. But the whole key here is Griffin. And Griffin's tape is terrible. In reality, he's only had one very good year, and some of that was fluky too, and that's his rookie season. It was all play action and read option and using his athletic ability and Shanahan coaching him up extremely, extremely well and taking defenses by storm because they'd never seen something like that. Since then, he's been a nightmare. He's been a very bad starting quarterback on tape. His athleticism is dropped. He's getting older. Injuries have been a huge concern. Changing systems have been a huge concern. I think there's been some immaturity in the player, some confidence issues. And I think the Browns still, though, we could catch lightning in a bottle for a guy that costs us next to nothing, doesn't even eat into our comp picks in 2017, that if Hugh Jackson can spend this entire season into trying to reclimate Robert Griffin III, who was a great prospect coming out of Baylor. That's undeniable. I mean, he was a great prospect, not just an athlete. He was a very good passer of the football, a very good deep ball thrower. He has a lot going for him in terms of talents. And they're building up his confidence now. They're making him the guy. I bet they trade McCown. You know, I think the Cowboys would be smart to be on that train. Denver, I don't know if they can afford him. But McCown's not a decent, not a bad player. And again, that's going to be more draft picks. The Browns are going to have so many draft picks going from the 2015, 16, 17 draft. And they're going to be high ones. They're going to be great ones. And if they can build a Raider-like foundation, then they might be able to attract some free agents. But the whole key for this year is if they can turn Robert Griffin III into a franchise player, you get a whole season to do it, they end up with a cheap stud quarterback, and they have all kinds of fallback plans if it doesn't work. So why not? You know, in the meantime, you're going to lose a lot of games, which I don't think breaks their heart, because then they're going to have better draft picks, more draft capital, more draft picks, you know, to trade down and bring in another 15 quality, you know, draft picks a year from now. And at positions they want. And maybe they trade Joe Thomas at the trade deadline and bring in even more picks, pick up a second round pick or, you know, two, a second and a third or something along those lines. So this team is going to flood their roster with draft picks over the next 2 or 3 years, if ownership allows it. And if they hit on half of them, they're going to have a quality roster. And they have some fallback plans at quarterback. They have 3 or 4 options at quarterback, with Kessler being the lowest, you know, ceiling guy. Robert Griffin III being the total shot in the dark that if it hits, you hit big and doesn't cost you anything. You gotta, it's kind of like the Seahawks with Russell Wilson is, boy, we still have all this cap money to spend. It's not like we have $20 million a year invested in a quarterback. Or, and maybe, and or, you still use a high pick on a quarterback, and all three of them are your guys for next year. Griffin signed to a 2-year deal. So the Browns are going to be the worst team in the league, and I've said this a couple times. If they're over-under for win total this year, by the way, we will do an over-under show, and that's, some people out there know what that is. We'll explain that later. But if the Browns' over-under win total for 2016 was 2.5, I would go under. I mean, I think they're that bad. I think they could be 0-16. It would shock me if they don't pick first overall. But that's all good. I mean, that's part, not part of the plan, but that's an inevitable, you know, case of how they're going to build this team. It's all about draft picks. I imagine when you look at their 2018 roster, they're going to have 35 guys that, and hopefully quality players, that they've drafted from these past couple classes that are young talent, and they'll have gobs of free agency money to spend. Kind of like the Raiders, they can go add their Osemeles and Crabtrees and Sean Smiths, assuming these foundation players, if they hit on a Mac and a Bortles and an Allen Robinson and a David Carr. And why wouldn't they? I mean, you're bringing that many guys, someone's going to hit. And just because it's the Browns, I think everyone jumps to the conclusion that immediately there's going to be ineptitude there. And there has been for so many years. I understand that. I get a kick out of that Browns jersey that has all the starting quarterbacks hanging off it. It is a joke. But I think they're doing things right. I think they have a plan. I urge you to read that article. I go in a little more depth and more statistics to back it up and numbers and whatnot. But I think Hugh Jackson is the guy for the job. And I think this front office has a plan, which Browns fans should be excited about. It's something to watch build like a expansion team. Look at yourself as an expansion team. Guys, that's going to do it. You know, wrapping it up here is another good show. I think this podcast is going very well. I'm very excited about it. So we will reconvene tomorrow around noon is my plan, as usual. Take care, all.
Progressive presents Mind Flowness with Flo.
Before you lies a beautiful meadow. In that meadow, Progressive Direct has placed its auto insurance rates alongside those of competitors. You select the lowest rate and feel a great sense of calm. A great sense of...
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates so you can rest easy. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.